From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White in for Beth React today. A ballot measure to split California into three states was blocked by the California Supreme Court yesterday. One billionaire is sad about that, but may still have his day before voters. State government reporter Ben Bradford is in to talk about that, and good to have you here on Insight.
Hey, good to be here, Randall.
We'll get to the three states being split up in just a moment. But first, this week has brought multiple challenges to gun control measures in California. And one of those challenges is a lawsuit filed against State Attorney General Javier Becerra relating to a new rule that requires people who own assault rifles or assault weapons equipped with what's called a bullet button to register the guns with the Department of Justice online. So why are they suing?
Yeah, so you have to go back to 2016 for both this one and then the other case that we'll talk about, which in 2016, lawmakers passed a series of firearms restrictions. And that had to do partially with the San Bernardino shooting that had happened before that. And one of the things that they did was they banned long rifles that come with magazines that can be detached using the tip of a bullet. So that's what a bullet button is.
Okay.
The idea being that you can just use a small thing. And California had previously banned the use of detachable magazines that are just, you know, with your hand, you can just pop them off and then slot another one on. The idea being to make it harder to reload quickly. So the bullet button was looked at by lawmakers, by Democratic lawmakers who passed the law as a kind of workaround for that and a loophole. And so they felt like they were closing it. They created a registry as opposed to outright saying you just can't have these for people who already have them. So it'd become illegal to sell them. And then for people who already had them, you could continue to hold them, but you had to file on this registration to
sort
go online.
Sort of a grandfather rule.
Yeah, but you had to go onto the Attorney General's website and put your name in and your information in and the kind of weapons that you had and so forth. And the lawsuit from several gun owners contests that this registry was just totally broken and that they tried to comply with the law that they do not like, but they tried to comply with it, but they could not, log on. They spent hours trying to do it, even days in some cases, and this thing was so broken that they couldn't do it, which meant that once the deadline passed, that they were all of a sudden in violation of the law, which could be either a misdemeanor or a felony.
And so the lawsuit is asking for what?
The lawsuit is saying that they can't,
they need to fix the website.
Yeah. Okay.
There's another court battle related to recently passed gun restrictions. In this case, the law in question requires owners of high capacity magazines, like you just mentioned, holding more than 10 rounds in this case, to either sell them to a licensed dealer, surrender them to law enforcement, or take them out of state. What's the legal challenge to this restriction all
about? So this one is not, you can register it online. California has long, for several years, had a ban on magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, and they this time said, no, well, you just can't have them anymore. If you already own them, you have to get rid of them, and you can sell them or you can put them out of state, like you just said, or you can surrender them. So gun owners challenged that and saying that was violated a couple of amendments of their Bill of Rights, right? The Second Amendment and also the Fifth Amendment against unwarranted seizure. And a district court had agreed with that and blocked the law. Well, they put an injunction in place, which means that they feel like the plaintiffs in the lawsuit are likely to win the case. The state appealed that to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And the Ninth Circuit this week also upheld that injunction, sent back the case to the lower court judge. The case is not over, but it all strongly suggests that this law is going to get struck down.
Okay.
And that was part of Proposition 63, which voters passed in 2016.
And then another big development that we mentioned right off the top of your segment here is the three Californias that gets so much attention nationally. Of course, NPR always asking us to file stories on this one. It just gets people's attention. It was blocked from being included on the November ballot by the state Supreme Court. How would this measure have worked if it was passed by voters?
Well, I think that's just the great question to start off with. But at least its intent was to express the will of the voters that they wanted to turn California into three Californias, a Northern California, a Southern California, and a California, with California being Los Angeles up to,
I want to say like Santa Barbara.
Like Monterey, I think. Yeah. Oh, okay. And then Northern California, including like the Bay Area and going up north from that. And then the Central Valley being Southern and San Diego being Southern California.
Okay.
So the state Supreme Court, what they said was that it would do less harm to take this thing off the ballot in 2018 and then evaluate whether this was constitutional. And there are many reasons to think that it's not constitutional. And then they could put it back on if they find that it is constitutional. They could put it back on in 2020. They said doing so would do less harm than leaving it on the ballot and potentially creating more complications for voters and for the state in something that is potentially unconstitutional. So pretty rare move. I don't know when we've seen them do that before. Mm-hmm. They may very well have, but it's unusual to say the least.
So they're taking their time, and then it could show up on a future ballot.
Yeah.
If they decide
that somehow this thing is constitutional. Now, I mean, there are some issues with that. So voters have the ability to revise the state constitution. Well, they have the ability to amend it, and that's different from a revision, which is considered to be larger. This would be a substantial change to California's constitution because California would no longer
California.
Be California.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So to do that, usually you would need the legislature, two-thirds of the legislature, each chamber of it, to put it to voters, and then for voters to agree with that. Of course, you need Congress's buy-in and, so forth. But
there's this one Silicon Valley billionaire that's behind it, and he was behind breaking us up into six states at one point,
right?
Yeah,
he wanted
right?
to do six, and so he spent, I think, $5 million of his own money this year, though, to put the three California's ballot measure on.
Mm-hmm. And who's behind him on this? Like, who
Well, I mean, he's
supports
the
it?
I mean, he's the primary funder of it. I mean, I think mm-hmm. that, you know, you might have State of Jefferson folks, right, which is, I mean, where that comes from is the six California concept before that, but we've really seen this backed by one billionaire, and it goes to show also just, I mean, how the initiative system works. I mean, you need a certain amount of money to collect the signatures and to get something on the ballot, and if you have that amount of money, you can do that, and we've seen that more and more in past years of a person taking on an issue and saying, hey, I want to put this on the ballot, using their own money, bankrolling it. We saw it with the 72-hour rule in the legislature in the last election cycle.
Mm-hmm. We also see people threatening to put things on the ballot in order to get the legislature to behave.
That's absolutely right. And so that, and more and more now, because there's another rule that's new that allows people to take their initiatives off the ballot by themselves, not having the court
take it off, like
in this case. But because of that, it's given more leverage. So this year we saw, three different attempts to do that on really significant ballot initiatives, that had to do with, lead paint and had to do with privacy and data and one more that I'm forgetting on live radio.
Well, if you're going to do it here. You know his voice very well. Cap Radio's state government reporter, Ben Bradford. He is here for this week's Capital Chat. And finally, Ben, you'll be releasing a new episode of your political podcast, which if people haven't checked it out yet, highly recommend going and searching. Say right to your smart speaker, I want to listen to the podcast Keys to the House, which addresses, in this case, a sleeping giant in California politics. What is this sleeping giant?
Yeah, so that's the term that you hear thrown around a lot for sort of the Latino vote. Oh, by the way, can I just say it was the soda tax? It was the proposed
soda tax.
You remember. What the other one was. I'm sorry, I just needed to get that out there. I do know what it was. Okay, so Keys to the House. We're looking at the battleground congressional races. California has this opportunity to really be a deciding factor in this election about who controls the House of Representatives. And we go through sort of that setup in our first episode, which we did prior to the primary election. And then we've kind of bitten off pieces of the themes that could determine those different the seven races that are really kind of most concentrated on. And one of the things in California is that, the Latino vote, Latinos are the largest racial or ethnic demographic in California, almost 40% of the population. And they vote overwhelmingly for Democrats. And the sort of
when they go to the polls,
when they go to the polls. And so the conception of this episode is essentially that this wouldn't even be a race in California. You know, you would not have the attention to it because it would be decided for Democrats if Latinos turned out in the same numbers as, let's say, white voters. Now, there are all kinds of reasons that that doesn't happen. And so we're exploring those in this episode. And I have two of just California's kind of, you know, most brilliant experts on Latino voting patterns. We had a Republican strategist, Mike Madrid, and the University of Southern California, the California Civic Engagement Project's Mindy Romero on to talk about it, both of whom study these things.
We have a little sound from them?
We do have a little bit of sound from them. I just want to set that up real quick here because, you know, we were talking about sort of the larger trends that helped depress Latino turnout. But one of the things that I found really interesting that we started talking about, and Mike Madrid, the political strategist as a campaigner, was talking about how campaigns actually go out and target voters and how as you're less likely to vote, you're also less likely to be encouraged to vote.
I don't think it's the biggest challenge, but there's no question it matters. You know, we buy data from largely the same vendor or vendors in this state, and it's really good data, and for good reason. They sell us the likeliest voters. And many campaigns have spoken only to those likely voters. And as Latinos miss an election, if you miss, you know, one election, then we slowly start to cut you out of the universe, and so that starts another downward trend.
Let me add one more thing to that. Let's be honest about something else. They're not necessarily looking for most campaigns and candidates. There's always exceptions, but they're not necessarily looking for new voters. They are really looking for the folks that they can bank on, right? They've run the numbers. And Mike, you can disagree with me on any of this. But I think in large part, there are always exceptions, but they're looking strategically for when they run the numbers, right? When they calculate who are not only going to vote for them, but they can pretty much bet it's going to vote for them, right? That's the return on investment. New voters, even of the same party, right? So registering a lot of Latinos, right, that are going to skew Democrat, still can be risky. It isn't a guarantee that those new voters are going to be voting for your candidate or your party's endorsed candidate. And it's in part at least why we don't see nearly what we would expect to see in California in terms of engagement and investment by the Democratic Party into the Latino community when it comes to registration and get out the vote.
So why is that? Why is there not that investment in trying to get the Latino population to vote?
Well, you know, it has to do with, again, you know, they're talking about the limited resources that campaigns have, and you want the most likely people. What Madrid is saying is that you want them, the people that you know are going to show up, you want to make sure they know to show up for your guy or woman and, you know, your candidate and get them to vote for it. And then what Mindy Romero is saying there is that there's also, you know, the campaigns want the sure thing. They don't want to motivate people to vote who aren't going to go and vote for them. And this spawns a whole conversation then that, you know, we look back a couple of decades at sort of how the parties, who they actually are targeting and who they want to target. And, it, you know, it's really interesting, both just they have different perspectives. And you heard on there a little bit, like, you know, there's going to be some disagreement there. But it's really interesting and surprising to me some of the things that they agree on. Like, they agree that, as you heard from Mindy there, that the Democrats, who Latinos overwhelmingly vote for, still are not making the kind of investment that they could make. Now, you'll hear Madrid talk about how he thinks that's changing to some degree because it's essentially like a market inefficiency, this idea that people are so just bombarded who are likely voters, right? They're just getting robocalls and they're getting campaign flyers and they're getting emails. They're just, you know, besieged by
that's a good word
when
for
a campaign's,
it.
Yeah, like, during campaign season, and that there can be value now in trying to get other people who are less plugged in, and so that and encouraging them to vote, and that's, you know, from a campaign perspective. And then, you know, Mindy has more of the kind of, you know, public good perspective of trying to incorporate more voters and so forth. So it's an interesting conversation.
Wouldn't they agree? I would imagine on both sides that if the message continually gets put toward the Latino voting population, that their vote matters, if they heard that, you know, over and over again, that they would be far more likely to be that populist population that goes to the polls?
That is a beautiful question, and it's a very complicated answer.
Yeah.
And I think that the basic answer to that would be a little bit. And then they would talk about how you can't just do that, though, with the issues that the campaigns are tending to put forward, right? They're saying that there are issues that would speak to many of these voters because of their socioeconomic situation, because of their age, or, you know, those kinds of things that have nothing to do with that's not primarily because of their ethnicity. It's because of these other sort of factors, right? And so they both talk about, you know, creating a platform and neither party really having a platform that is catering to these voters, and the idea that people might be disengaged because people aren't speaking to them. Literally not speaking to them, but also not speaking to them in terms of the party platforms.
Well, people will want to hear more on this topic, and they're in luck.
Yeah. So we will have that episode out later today. It's called Keys to the House, is the name of the podcast. And that'll be our sixth episode. And each one kind of bites off one of these little pieces.
And we do the standard. You can find it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah, let's do that. That's the standard one.
you can also get it right at Cap Radio if you want.
Yeah, it's capradio.org/podcasts, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, and we also throughout the day we'll play like little segments from it as well, like you heard here on Insight. Keys to the House. Ask your smart speaker, or when you see Ben Bradford on the streets of Sacramento, just ask him. He'll rattle off a podcast for you. State government reporter Ben Bradford, thanks for joining us for Cap Chat today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And this is Capital Public Radio. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyak. You're listening to Insight.